This is Take Flights with Mark Whittle.
I'm Mark Whittle, former city worker turned performance coach, and this is your place for inspiration and education on ways to optimise your performance. Thanks for choosing to take flight.
Toby, welcome to the Take Flight podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us in your lovely home. You were saying you designed it yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, the interior design, yeah, I like doing things myself and having my own little... put my own little spin on things.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Thanks for having us. It's a real privilege to be sat with you today. So just for people who are listening, if you're watching, you can obviously see the setup here. We're in Toby's house. If you're listening, the noise you can hear is your breathing apparatus,
which is
supporting your breathing. Can you explain what it is?
Yeah, sure. So with my level of injury, I can't breathe by myself. So I have a ventilator that breathes for me. And all it does is essentially... push air in the back and then push it into my lungs at a certain volume and a certain pressure. It does get quite complicated if you really want to get into the medical science of it, but ultimately it's just breathing for me.
Is it comfortable?
No, it's not comfortable, but I've gotten used to it. It's certainly not comfortable because it is invasive. It's pushing, it's forcing air into your lungs and, I've got a tracheostomy in my throat, which is just a hard piece of plastic inside your lungs, and your body tries to reject it, you know. So if I choke halfway through, then yeah, you'll know why.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. Your book was fantastic.
Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah. It took me a while to get that on paper, and I did have a bit of a. Yeah, I was in two minds whether to do it or not, if I'm honest.
What were the two minds?
The one was, you know, in our world, it's not really the done thing to write books or talk about certain aspects of my previous job.
You mean the special forces world?
Yeah, being in special forces and that side of things is just... but then the other side of it was my story... is without sounding, you know, arrogant or anything, it is inspirational and it is quite motivational and it can help a lot of people, I think. And well, I certainly hope so. I had these, you know, I was torn between the two things. But I spoke to the guys that are still serving and a couple of my mates and they were like, yeah, so just do it, man, because... your story is so unique and so different to the traditional special forces, you know, biceps and bullets kind of book. It's hugely inspirational, help a lot of people. So I had the backing of all my, you know, ex-colleagues and basically the whole unit, really. Yeah, they were all behind me 100%.
So that's amazing.
I just went for it.
Yeah, thank you for doing it as well. Like, it's amazing. But do you know what I think is interesting? The two minds, I think a lot of us have those, not specific to forces, but we have the mind of, we feel like we have a message to deliver to the world and it's inspiring for someone to be moved by. And then there's the other one, which is, in your example, it's the forces expectation, but we have this sort of external expectation. What are other people going to think you know, do we find the message that we want to get out there? So yeah, just thanks so much for doing it, mate. It was really special. I recommend everyone to go out and get it. Never Till I Die.
Yeah, it's a great book. And I mean, if anyone does want to, yeah, you can get it off Amazon or Waterstones. It's pretty easy to find. it is a great story and it's hugely inspirational.
So we're going to touch on parts of the story today. I think a big part of why I'm here is because I was so interested to hear your mindset and the way that you live and the things that have happened post your injury, but also to understand a bit about who you were before your injury as well. I'd love to start with the injury itself to give the context to the wider conversation.
Okay.
How long ago was it now?
So I was injured in 2009. So 2009. That's 13 years.
Yeah. Okay, wow.
Going on 14. This in November this year will be 14 years.
Wow. Okay.
It's a long time.
And I was just, I swang past the Through Dark lads place just before I came here.
Okay.
And Staz was telling me that you guys all knew each other anyway from the forces.
That's right, yeah.
I've interviewed Foxy, I've interviewed Ollie Ollerton, good friends with Ollie.
Yeah.
And a few other lads.
Together, yeah.
Yeah. So you knew a lot of these people.
Yeah,
before.
Yeah. I know Foxy very well. He's a good friend of mine. And he was there the night I was injured. In fact, he was probably, he was in a different team, but he was one of the lads who was saved my life, essentially.
Wow. Foxy was.
Yeah, Foxy was there on the ground in the exact same battle, the same fight. So.
Wow. Okay. Amazing. Yeah,
We've just stayed good friends ever since. But
yeah, I bet.
You do, you know, that's what the military's all about, friends for life.
Yeah. And Staz was saying that he showed you to his bunk or something before he left, and then that was when you came in.
Yeah, that's right. Tour. Yeah, so weird. As I came in, Staz, you know, and it was just one of those weird coincidences. Yeah, I just ended up taking his little room, taking over, you know, we swap out and... we just crossed paths and had a good chat, catch up. And it's great. Jeez. Yeah, you bring back some memories there. Give me some tips, what it's like on the ground, what's been happening the last few jobs they've been on, and what kind of tempo it is out there at the moment. I remember it. Yeah, it was crazy times. Mm.
And what happened on that tour, and then what happened specifically the day of the injury?
Well, that tour was pretty intense. We'd just taken over as you were saying, you know, from the other guys. And it was just a very, what we'd say, a very kinetic time. The Taliban were very active, and... yeah, we were going out night on night, job after job, and every job was almost guaranteed to go live, as we would say, go live, as in go, you know, rounds fired, however you want to put it. And yeah, one of the jobs, we were after a high value target. And obviously I can't say much around who was or where I was, but it was pretty far out, and he was pretty high up the chain in the command of the Taliban. And I remember, we went in, got our brief, did our orders. Everything was kind of going as it should. I remember going down to the helos, you know, the helicopters, getting all geared up, you know, doing my checks, making sure everything was prepped and ready to go. And yeah, we went out on the job. It's a long walk in. And we got to target. When we got to target, we were informed that there were women and children on target. And the powers that be just at the time, there was a lot of civilian casualties going on in Afghan at the moment, so we couldn't use our normal method of entry, which is to ultimately catch the enemy by surprise. So we couldn't really do that because that puts civilians at risk. So we had to think outside the box, and we ended up smashing through one of the gates, one of the solid steel gates that was sort of locked and everything. Anyway, it gave the enemy just that 5 seconds, 10 seconds of getting prepped, and we lost the element of surprise, which is really one of our main gameplays, given that little edge. And we walked in, and as we went through the building, unfortunately they were all set up and they just opened fire on us, and a few of us caught it up. I wasn't the only one to catch it up. A friend of mine behind me caught it up. He got shot through the knee. But unfortunately, I was shot through the neck, which hit my spinal cord and paralyzed me instantly. I went down. Actually, the second round, because it was just, you know, a hail of bullets, the second round hit the side of my helmet and ricocheted off, which would have killed me instantly. But... luckily, you know, these Kevlar helmets are pretty good these days. But and then, you know, firefight ensued, dragged me out and started working on me, trying to save my life. But that gives you a little bit of an insight as to kind of how it went.
Yeah, thanks, Toby. It sounds like, so to not put the civilians at risk, you put yourselves at risk to a degree.
Yeah, that's basically the way it goes, you know, sometimes.
Yeah,
that's the way it goes. It's part of the job. And what can I say, you know? But ultimately, I mean, that's what we're there for, you know. We're there to protect civilians, protect the innocent.
And, of course, yeah.
You know, that's the job. You know what you sign up for. Mm. So, yeah.
So you spoke about Foxy being a part of that sort of,
yeah,
the team that came in and rescued you.
Mm-hmm.
In your book, you talk about how, you know, it's kind of expected that that's a death kill there. That's like you're going to likely to die getting shot in the neck.
Yeah. It's as close as it gets without dying straight away.
What do you remember about the night, or is your story from other people's memories?
No, that's pretty much, it's kind of a mix and a mash of my story plus other people's bits. After that, I don't really remember much, if I'm honest. The rest then comes from my mates, and the rest is sort of pieced together, and I still kind of get a few flashbacks here and there, random flashbacks, which I don't know, is my mind just making it up, or did that actually happen? You know, so yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It's a weird thing.
Again, in the book, like something that caught my ear, I suppose, when I was listening, was that you said at this stage, piecing it together, it's like chasing ghosts.
Yeah,
I love that phrase.
It's chasing ghosts. You don't know where you are in flashbacks. You don't know what's real or who's real or what actually happened. It's it's like that Twilight Zone, man. In between worlds. Yeah, I don't really know what I'm trying to say, but the brain is a strange thing. It blocks things out when it needs to. And you just get like fragments and things that come through.
Is it blocking things out to protect us, do you think?
Yeah, of course it is. That's the brain's sort of defense mechanism. You know, it doesn't just happen with, happens with all kinds of trauma.
Mm.
Not just, you know, combat trauma. It happens with all kinds of trauma.
I've spoken with Mark Ornrod.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine as well. Yeah, really good friend.
Great guy. Who was, I think he was actually pronounced dead. Was that a similar situation for yourself?
Yeah, a few times. I think twice, literally flatlined completely. That's it. Yeah, and then try and bring him back. The thing about with me was they'd be able to sort of get a pulse, but then it would quickly disappear again, basically, and they were like, we can't seem to stabilize him. And then it was only after a while they realized that there was severe damage to the actual high up on the spinal cord, meant that there was, you know, severe nerve damage to the body and to the lungs, and all kinds of implications from there on in, you can imagine. Bleeding on the brain, oxygen starvation, so on and so forth. So, yeah, it was, just completely touch and go, you know.
Wow, so you were dead.
Yeah, gone dead and dusted at one point. I remember speaking to a mate of mine who was on the helo with me when I got dropped off at an American base, because that was the first point of call, was an American base. And he put me on the back of, it was basically a quad bike that came out with like a trailer on the back to the helo to pick me up. And he was like, yeah, man, there's no chance. He's gone. We won't see him again. And I think that was the general consensus across the squadron at the time, was nice. There's no chance there. So when they found out that I was actually still alive at Camp Bastion, where I finally got to, they were like, damn, he's still alive. fair play to him.
Yeah. Is that what you mean when you say like caught between worlds, that Twilight Zone
was
there?
It's unexplainable. You can't really put it into words, you know. I'm not religious or any of that kind of, you know, I don't get all carried away with the fairies and all that kind of stuff. There was no, you know, bright lights or any of that. I mean, yeah, people might have their own experiences, but for me, it was just complete, you know, blackness, but you're sort of slightly aware of the blackness. Yeah, there's no floor, there's no roof, there's no sides. It's just blackness, and you can't really make heads or tail of it.
Just space.
Yeah, just space. Yeah, exactly that. You can't judge distance. You can't. There's nothing to get a grounding of where you are or what's going on. And maybe that was just the brain's way of like we were just saying just now, defending itself and that. But to me, that's it. And then after that, you start with all the drugs they've got you on to try and keep you alive. Mm. A lot of them are opiates, and they're all, you know, mess your brain up massively, and you start hallucinating, and you start going into, you know, little wormholes of distant memories and childhood memories and other things that have happened in your life that you totally forgot about. And yeah, you can't judge you can't judge time or what's going on or where you are. You jump from place to place to place, you know. At one point I thought I was back in South Africa, and then another point I thought I was back in Afghan, and I was just jumping all over the place. Just strong emotions that you felt as a kid.
What memories did it bring up?
I mean, for me, most of it was, like I was just saying, I was back in South Africa, like walking around.
Like as a kid or?
No, as I was.
But just a place of comfort.
Yeah, or something like that, just some familiarity. Like your brain's really trying hard to make sense of everything, you know? And I guess that was the only thing that really kind of made sense is, you know, default settings or something. And I was walking around South Africa and But I was like, I couldn't make sense of it. I was like, how can I be back in South Africa? It doesn't make sense. I kept looking down and I kept seeing this thing hanging off my neck. And I kept thinking, what is this thing hanging off my neck? And I couldn't really see it. But obviously that was this tube and this tracheostomy thing and this foreign body sticking out of my neck. So it's things like that, you know what I mean? It's a mishmash of what's really going on and like the darkest corners of your mind. It's crazy.
Wow. I mean, thanks, by the way.
Yeah, it's fascinating on one hand, pretty scary on the other, but
It is. So during that period where you were kind of in and out, pronounced dead, back to life, were you like grappling with your own mortality in that, or were you not conscious enough to be able to do that?
Yeah, I think you are grappling with your own mortality. I think there was definitely this, like, part of me, this instinctive drive to survive. Mm. You know, this massive instinctive drive to survive, which just comes naturally, a survival instinct. And, there was definitely this, like, feeling of panic and, like, just a feeling of you just got to stay alive. You just got to stay alive. Just keep going. Just keep going. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. You know.
Because what happened if you gave up?
Well, I mean, I probably wouldn't be sitting here today. I'd probably be dead. So.
Wow. What was the survival instinct like? Can you explain how that felt?
No, I mean, it's just instinct. Kind of like a fight or flight, you know, sort of thing. You know, you just, that adrenaline's pumping, and you're really just going off. Yeah, you're just going off basic instinct, really.
Sounds like you're explaining, you know, the saying, like, holding on for dear life.
So, that's all you are doing. Yeah, you're just holding on for dear life. You don't know what you're doing. It's not like there's a manual on this thing. You just trying to stay alive. You're literally just trying to stay alive. in any way, shape or form, you know, that's you do whatever it takes, you just do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And maybe my training had something to do with that. You know, my entire military career was all about that. You just keep pushing yourself. You just keep going, you know.
What do you think it was that allowed you to survive? Like, what's the trait that you put to that?
Stubbornness. Hmm. Yeah, stubbornness. I don't like being out of control. And I certainly, I've just been one of those people who don't like being told no, or being told, you know, this is what's happening, whether you like it or not. Yeah. If it doesn't sit right with me, I guess, I've just got this incredible thing inside me that just likes to resist. Yeah, call it whatever you will.
I love that. It's so funny you say stubbornness, because the only other time I've heard someone say stubbornness was Foxy on this podcast. I remember him because I'll ask you the same question at the end, but the single trait that separates you from basically being who you are versus not reaching or the level of success and the things you've achieved, right? He said stubbornness, and I was kind of thinking stubbornness is a strange word to use, because it sometimes in my mind that's like, it's not always a good thing.
Yeah, it's got like a bad connotation to it, doesn't it? But yeah, stubbornness can you know, it's useful. It's like anything, I guess. I guess it's like anything, yeah. Just like anger, you know, it's got two sides to it. It can be useful in certain aspects, certain, you know, scenarios, and then it can be detrimental in others.
Can I ask you about the other side of stubbornness, which would be acceptance?
Mm-hmm.
At which stage during your recovery were you able to, or have you fully accepted the injury and the consequences of the injury?
No, I do get asked this quite a lot. And I always say the same, in a roundabout way, I say the same thing, which is no, I haven't accepted my injury and I never will. For me, acceptance is kind of like just giving up in a way. Like, I just got to accept it, and you just got to accept that it is the way it is, which is true in some respects, but it's like lying down, you know, it kind of feels like giving up. I'll just keep pushing. I'll just keep pushing the boundaries and keep trying my best, you know, and see what happens.
Do you think there's a difference between accepting and submitting?
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. I never really thought about that. Maybe I think it is submitting. I mean, I am a realist. I understand where my injury is and what the practicality is around it. There is a bit of acceptance, I guess. I suppose there has to be a bit of acceptance, but I don't like to just be like, oh, I've just got to accept it now.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll keep pushing and keep trying different things and getting out there and wanting to live life to the fullest I can, trying to make the most of life, trying to do things that any other normal person can do.
I suppose acceptance is when it's only if there's suffering in the events that have happened, I suppose. If there's still suffering, is there a space for accepting?
Yeah, acceptance.
We can accept it's happened, but not
accept. You can accept it's happened, but you don't have to accept your circumstances. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to accept what people tell you is what is going to be the norm from now on. You don't have to accept that just because someone's told you that, or this is what the general people, or what happens to the general population who are in this situation. Mm-hmm. That's just following the crowd.
It's putting limitations on what's possible.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And if you don't push those limitations, then you're never going to know. And you know, someone's got to trailblaze.
You'll be that person.
Why not? Somebody's got to do it.
And you certainly are. You certainly are. Look, I'd love to hear about all the things you've done to trailblaze. Before we do that, I want to know who you were before the injury, and perhaps we won't start with the forces, but what do I need to know about your sort of upbringing, your childhood, to know about who Toby is?
Yeah, my childhood shaped me, and I think my childhood definitely taught me things that helped me in my military career at a young age and gave me the edge. certainly. So I moved around a lot as a kid. I didn't really have a very supportive family, and that just made me grow up pretty quick. And I guess by growing up pretty quick, it puts you in situations that your peer group or your age group aren't exposed to. And that taught me a lot of life's hard lessons at a young age. Probably too young, if I'm honest, for a lot of stuff.
What sort of lessons? What happened? The reason I ask that is Ollerton, who spoke about, a friend of mine who had, I don't know if you're familiar with his story, with he was attacked by a chimp.
He was attacked,
as well,
yeah.
Nearly killed as well. And that has shaped him massively. So there's everyone has their own version of that, to varying degrees of trauma.
Of course, yeah.
So just what were the things?
I mean, for me, it was, I mean, basically along the lines of life lessons. You know, I had to move around a lot. I had to learn how to integrate myself into different groups of peer groups and how to blend in. I learned a lot about myself and what I was capable of at a young age. I guess it just made me also mature fast, because I used to hang around a lot of older kids. And a lot of them were into some bad stuff, and I saw some bad stuff growing up. So I learned the difference between right and wrong, you know, pretty sharply and pretty harshly. And that stuck with me, I think. I think that really stuck with me, you know. I think I've always had quite a real strong know-how of what's right and what's wrong. But you also learn how to fend for yourself, how to be comfortable in your own skin, be comfortable with who you are, and I guess most importantly, you know, that you can rely on yourself. Yeah, no matter how, you know, bad the situation gets, yeah, you learn to be self-reliant. I think that's probably one of the biggest things I learned was,
what I found interesting was to say, like, thinking independently.
Yeah.
How has that benefited you with something you never would have foreseen in your injury, right? Okay, there's physical capabilities that have been affected, but you've still got your independent thinking.
Yeah, which I was really lucky, because they were 99% sure there'd be brain damage, just because of the injury. So close to the brain, oxygen starvation, so on and so forth. So yeah, the fact that I can, you know, I've still got full brain capacity is,
miracle.
Yeah, it's godsend.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm getting carried away, jumping back into today, but we'll get there.
But yeah, independent thinking, absolutely.
Well, it's so easy to get stuck in other people's thoughts and beliefs, isn't it? Because like, especially when you said, like, earlier on in your youth, you were wanting to fit in different groups, moving around.
Yeah.
And then you learn that actually, where does that get you? By trying to be the chameleon that blends in every group.
Yeah.
You end up just not being yourself.
Yeah, and it's so easy to fall into a trap of you don't want to be an outsider, you don't want to be the odd one out. Nobody wants, you know, so it's tough being, you know, profiled. And I was profiled quite a bit growing up, you know, in America. You're that foreign kid with the funny accent and from a different country, and you get profiled. You see yourself falling into the trap of trying to act like, you know, you're your mates, or trying to act like the people that are around you. And I think that's why people's accents change. Yeah, you'll notice that's why a lot of people lose their accent, because it's a defense mechanism. It goes back to like tribal days, because that's how you fit it. You need to fit in. There comes a line where you have to say, okay, you know, it's all well and good, but I want to be my own person. I want to think for myself. And yeah. Well, London Manager, I don't actually agree with this. And that kind of independent thinking has helped me throughout my life. And to be honest, it's one of the biggest traits with the Special Forces soldier is that, and it's what they look for in selection, is that independent self-thinking. You know, you've got the intelligence to think for yourself, not just follow the crowd. And I remember throughout my selection process, they put these little tests in to see what you do, to see if you are just going to follow the crowd or if you are just going to be a sheep. I think, yeah, the fact that I learned that at such a young age really helped me throughout my military career and probably got me to where I was. And it's helped me after my injury as well, yeah.
It's funny you talk about the voice, like people adapting their accents and stuff, because I heard it on the sales floor when I worked in the city. Like, you'd hear people's voices change when they're trying to sell or manipulate someone, or you can call it influence, but manipulate and try to sell.
Yeah, there's a psychology behind it. Yeah. There definitely is.
Yeah. But you're ultimately not being yourself, right? You're having to adapt a version of yourself to please the person who you're speaking with.
Yeah. Which can act in your favor. But like I said, you need to remember that there comes a point where you have to think for yourself. And be your own person.
And it's great to hear that the forces look specifically at that, because as you were talking, I could kind of imagine.
Well, I mean, I talk about that at a certain level of the forces. If I go back a few levels in the forces, they look for the opposite. They want followers.
Okay, interesting.
They want followers.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, but the upper tier, the tier one SF realm world, they're looking for the thinkers. They're looking for the guys who can think outside the box.
Yeah.
Aren't just going to, because the officer says, charge towards the enemy. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to, okay.
Mm.
Well, no, that's just stupid.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. So interesting. But I suppose at the top tier, why do they want independent thinkers? Because they're the ones who can deal with difficult things, right?
Yeah.
Get through tough situations.
Yeah, difficult situations, but they're also, they're having to deal with things on their own.
Yeah.
You know, they're treated as adults and they're having to solve problems by themselves, where they don't have, you know, corporals and sergeants and officers and this and this and this and this and this all looking after them.
And generally speaking, the sheep is always looking externally, right? The sheep's looking outside of himself for help all the time. Like, I need help. Like, someone tell me what to do, where to go. Whereas the independent thinker can take charge of a situation and lead.
Yeah, exactly. And can, fend for himself, you know. If he gets put in a scenario, he's, you know, he's got the tools and he's got the intelligence to figure it out by himself. He doesn't have to rely on anyone else. And that's a key trait, which you'll see throughout the SF guys.
What was it like growing up in South Africa?
What's it like growing up in South Africa? Back in the 80s and the 90s, it was a totally different country, you know. It was still going through that transition period, change of government, which was interesting, actually. But South Africa's quite a tough, brutal country, you know. They're very, like, macho kind of culture. You know, you have to be very manly. And there's no room for weakness, you know. And because it's quite third world, there is no room for weakness, really, you know. And again, if you don't do it, and if you don't go out and find a job or get stuck in, no one's going to help you. You know, you don't get a lot of the benefits you can get in other countries. But as a kid growing up, it's very, you know, sport orientated, and it's like that male testosterone. There's a very male testosterone environment. That's what I remember the most, you know. It's all about sports. It's all about, you know, being number one, being champion, you know, being head boy, being captain of the rugby team, who's the best of the best, you know, everyone. And just that kind of culture just flows through the entire country. It's weird. It's also really cool. It's also really cool because you've got all kinds of different climates there and different environments. So you've got the oceans, the beaches, the surf, the mountains, the extreme sports, loads of dirt bikes and yeah, just that super outdoors lifestyle, which was cool, which was really cool.
Got the surfboard behind me. We've got surfboard pictures around. Did you surf in South Africa?
I did, and I loved it. I've always loved the outdoors. I've loved the freedom of just being in the elements, being part of nature. Massive fan of it. I think not only is it fun and enjoyable, but there's like so many like health benefits, mental health benefits to it. You know, it's just such a good place to de-stress and, you know, just get away from all the stress in life, you know. And I've really used that as part of my own brand that I'm, you know, making now, Bravery. And that's why it's core sort of thing is extreme sports and getting out and doing some gnarly stuff, because you can learn a lot from it, and it's great for that mental health, you know. But it teaches you a lot of lessons, you know, surfing and motocross and dirt bikes. You're pushing yourself out of your comfort zone. You know, you really are pushing yourself, and you're facing that fear. And I think fear is like a muscle. Or resilience is like a muscle. You have to constantly expose yourself to it to become resilient to it and to become familiar with it, so that it doesn't have such detrimental effects on you. And the more you expose yourself to it, the more your brain learns how to cope with it, you know. And if you don't use it, you lose it.
So much in life is repetition, isn't it?
But you're doing all these gnarly extreme sports.
Yeah.
And you're teaching yourself how to face your fears, challenge yourself, push yourself to your limits, you know, and then you can then transfer those skills into real day life, you know, with business or with any challenges. Which is why I encourage kids to get out there and do it, because as your brain's developing as a kid, you're learning these skills that are going to ultimately help you in later on in life. You're not going to be afraid to challenge yourself, go into a boardroom and stand up and do a presentation. You know, do you know what I mean? Anything like that. You're not afraid to go for an interview for a job because, you're used to pushing yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, mate. So at some stage you moved to England, joined the forces.
Yep, that's right.
And that was obviously like a major part of your journey.
Yeah, it was. Again, I wanted to push myself out of my comfort zone. I wanted to do more than just live the normal life in South Africa. And I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to do something that's going to ultimately, make a difference. So...
Well, did you join the Marines first, or what did you
do? Yeah, I joined the Marines. They're all Marine commandos. I came over in 2006 or 2005 to join the Marines.
You moved by yourself?
Yeah, just by myself. Again, I was used to it. I don't, like I said, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm comfortable with who I am. So I just packed a bag and was like, this is something I want to do. This is something I think I need to do. So, I just saved up enough money for a flight, packed enough, you know, a couple of sets of clothes and...
One-way ticket
and went for it.
Right, this is really, I didn't realize this. So this, obviously this podcast is called Take Flight.
Take Flight. Exactly, man. Take Flight. And that was a Take Flight moment. Literally and, you know, philosophically.
Yeah. So what, I know that you spoke about you saw the childhood, seeing the good and the bad, and you said exposed to bad, so then you could distinguish the two. What was it though that allowed you to, well, what made you want to do it first, and what allowed you to actually follow through with the idea and take action on it?
Well, I wanted to do it because I knew how tough it was, and I was at an age in my life where I wanted to see, you know, if I was physically capable of handling myself, and I wanted to see if this, you know, would break me, really? Would this be the, you know, the toughest thing, and could I achieve it? So there was this, you know, challenge thing, and I love a challenge. So that was, you know, drawing me towards it. But there was also this camaraderie and family bonding that I'd heard about in the Marines and things like that. So that's really what pushed me to want to go and do it. Yeah, that's really why I wanted to, yeah, try and see if it's, if it, yeah, if I can do it.
Mm. It's so funny the amount of times and the similarities of people who have done great things is this desire just to challenge yourself and push yourself in the toughest situations. Like, do you know Aldo Kane?
Yeah, Aldo Kane is another good friend of mine. I was with him on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I told you what we were doing on Tuesday.
Oh,
yeah,
he was there. Yeah, he was there. Okay, yeah. Cool.
So he was there doing a talk with me.
Right, yeah, nice. So nice.
There's a couple of us, a whole bunch of us. Mm. We all come from that same era. So there's like me, Staz, Louis, Foxy, Aldo Kane, Nims.
Yeah.
Nims. Oh, there's a whole bunch of us. We're all, we're all in the service at the same time.
Special group.
It's weird, yeah. Special group. Really weird.
Yeah. So I remember when I spoke with him, this is a few years ago now, he was explaining some of the places that he'd been to do some of the work he was doing at the time, right? Setting up some of for filming crews, I think it was, but some of the most dangerous places in the world. When I asked him which was his favorite place to go, he told me the one that was the most challenging place that he spent time in. I think it was Doha, something like that. He said it was really, really difficult. So that was his favorite. And at the time I was thinking, that's weird. Like my belief system at the time was I would enjoy the one that was the safest probably, you know, but it's not always the way that, the thread seems to be on this podcast is that the more challenging, the more enjoyable.
Yeah, I can see how that is a trend with people that you've interviewed before. It's about the challenge. Not everyone's like that, you know. A lot of people like to stay within their comfort zone and within their boundaries, which is fair enough, you know. I think that's perfectly acceptable. But these sort of guys, you know, that you're talking about and were mentioned, we were the type who just, love to push the boundaries and see what is possible. And I don't really know what it is. I don't really know where it comes from or, but there's just this incessant drive to see, you know, how much you can take. And that, I guess, just has a knock-on effect to doing things that are, not a lot of people have done. And not a lot of people have achieved. One of my favorite sayings is, learn to love what other people hate. You know, and people always look at me like, what the hell does that mean? And I find that if you want to push yourself, learn to love what everyone else is avoiding or what everyone else hates, you know, like everyone else, most people, for instance, hate the cold or, you know, they hate certain things. But if you learn to love those sort of things and get stuck in, like, in an endurance race, that pain of pushing yourself beyond that barrier, people don't like to do it. And if you train your brain to love that pain, if you can do that, I think you're onto a winner, because you'll do things that most people won't, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Cause I was going to say, cause learning to love what others hate allows you to do things that others can't.
Just it separates you from the crowd.
Yeah.
Because most people are going to avoid it, aren't they? Mm. And it's a great thing, you know, in the military, you'll see people avoiding certain things. Mm. And if you're smart enough to pick up on that, it's generally, those are the things that need to be done. And those are the things that your training team are looking for. If you just get stuck into that, you're probably going to do pretty well.
Nice. I like that one. So you said you wanted to go to the military to see if it would break you. Did it break you?
Felt like it did at some points. There were some points. But everyone reaches that. Everyone hits a wall. Everyone has their down days. It's what you do in that moment. And I don't want to sound like, yeah, but it is. It is what you do in that moment. Mm. I've been like that after my injury as well. I've been to those dark moments, those dark times where, yeah, you think this is it. I've actually reached my point. I've reached the point where I've had enough. But for me, every time I've reached that point, I just keep going. I don't know why and I don't know how. I guess it's everything we've just talked about in terms of you've learned how to push yourself beyond that point. You've built up neuro pathways in your brain that just know now when you hit that point to just keep pushing yourself, and you've learned and you've trained your brain to keep pushing yourself, to keep pushing yourself, to keep pushing yourself. And if the mind will keep going, then the body will follow, you know. I'm sure you've probably heard that before. Yeah, if the mind will keep going, then the body will follow.
I remember once, I'll never forget the day I was in my flat in London where I used to live, and I've shared openly on this podcast like my experiences of mental health and stuff in the past, and I had my version of rock bottom where I was sat on the floor and I wasn't suicidal, but I remember thinking for the first time in my life, I feel this dark. I'm sure others feel worse than me, so I can understand why people do it. It's giving me goosebumps saying it again. And that was my worst moment ever. Yeah. That was my version of it. Like, what was yours? What did yours look like?
I mean, it was kind of the same, really. You know, I just got to a point where, I mean, this was after my injury, where I'd ended up in a hospital for people, you know, who were struggling with mental illness. And I was going through the process of trying to figure out about legal suicide and how it worked, and that I was at that point where I thought, I've made my mind up now, you know. And it just felt like everything was too much, you know, everything was too much. I couldn't cope with it all. I couldn't deal with what I'd lost. I couldn't deal with, you know, the injury. I just wasn't coping at all. I felt like I had no one to turn to. I had no one to rely on. And I just didn't see a way out. And got to that exact same kind of point. You know, I was sitting in this room in this psychiatric hospital. And it was all just a bed, and it was one of those places where they had a window on the door so people could monitor you. You know, there's a glass window on the door where they keep looking in to make sure you're not, you know, doing anything dangerous or trying to do anything dangerous. And I was just staring out the window for hours and hours on end, and I just felt like I just felt empty, you know, totally empty, with nothing inside me. That was my darkest moment. And hours went past, hours and hours. I could just staring, and not much was going on in my head. It was just like nothing. I guess I was just blanking everything out, because when I tried to process it, you know, it just felt worse. So yeah, I was just, I was in a really bad, bad place, man. Really bad place. And it took a lot of time and a lot of therapy to bring me out of that place. A lot of help, a lot of professional help, to slowly, sort of turn the corner, as it was.
Wow.
It's tough. Thanks, it was tough. It was really, really tough.
Yeah. What changed your mind when you said you were considering legal suicide? What changed your mind?
I got to, someone said to me, and it's a professional. He said to me, "Tobes, I just want you to try and remember three things about yourself that make you who you are." You know, and it was like a little bit of a shock. Because I, you know, my whole life I'd prided myself on being, you know, passionate and determined, and really strong-willed. And yeah, it just came flooding back to me. And that was like a real turning point for me. It was like just writing down on a piece of paper just these three things and just, you know, put that somewhere where you can see it. So I wrote down these three things, these three positive things about me that defined, that I thought defined me in a positive way. And I kept just looking at them and thinking about them and how they relate to me. And that was the best thing I'd ever done. And it just sort of slowly just kept growing. It was like, yeah, it was like seeds that had just been planted again, you know, or Kindle that had just been thrown on that little, those simmering coals inside me. And it just started to build and build. And that was really a real big turning point for me. Real big turning point for me.
Do you remember what the three things were?
I kind of remember. I mean, there was, I remember passion was the big one. You know, super passionate about everything I do, about life and about living life. And I remember this because this was the one that stuck with me the most, was that passion, that love for life, you know. And I thought, I don't want to lose that. I still have that passion. And that was one of the biggest ones. I think the other two, I can't remember. I think obviously one of them was resilience, and the other one was, I think I'm fiercely loyal. Yeah. I think actually I might have written them in my book, but it was around those sort of three things, and I just kept focusing on that, and then it became like a spider diagram, you know, with the arms coming off it and how it related back to me, and it sort of just, do you know what I mean? I started thinking right again, started thinking positively, and then I built onto that as to what I could contribute to the world and how I could contribute to the world. And that's really where I also came up with the idea of bravery and the company that I wanted to create, and being a force for good. And building a corporation that means something, that has a story, that has a powerful backstory. It's not just a brand, you know, for the sake of a brand or for making money or whatever. Which is fine. That's you know, whatever people's agenda is. But that was mine. I wanted to have a great company, you know, leave a legacy of some sort, you know.
It's outstanding the work that you're doing. We'll touch on bravery in a bit more detail in a moment. Is there anything that you're afraid of today? You spoke about fear earlier. Are there things that you fear today, having faced what, you know, all of us, whether we know it or not, our deepest fear is, you know, dying, having faced that?
I mean, fear is a strange one. I mean, my biggest fear, it's not really like a physical threat or anything. I'm not, you know, that's for me, it's probably sounds like a bit strange, but I guess would be, you know, dying or leaving this world and the vastness of eternity without making, you know, some sort of impact on the world, you know, leaving a mark. I think that's my biggest fear, is you just, whether you are here or not, makes no difference whatsoever. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I don't know if that makes sense. You know,
it does.
Whether you're here or not, no one's ever, it makes no odds. Yeah, it's finding that purpose and that drive, and then, yeah, making a mark, making your stamp on the world, I guess. And I think if I were to just Maybe that's why I didn't want to die. You know, maybe that's why in that moment of, you know, in between worlds, I was like, I haven't left enough of a mark on this world for me to go. So I'm going to stick around because, yeah, it scares the living life out of me, you know. I think that's my biggest fear. Yeah. Yeah.
I think so many will relate to that. So many will relate to that. Like the life of mediocrity is something that some people say, but I think that like leaving without having found your purpose and leaving that with the world or impacting people in the way that you want to do it. I think that's outstanding, mate. Thank you.
I think that's my biggest fear. Fear is one of those, you know, there's different levels of fear because there's also, you know, I do have other fears of, you know, I don't want my loved ones to be hurt and things like that. But a lot of it is, yeah, I never grew up with that kind of, you know, love and care and attention. So for me, yeah, it's sort of second on my list of what scares me the most, you know.
Mm.
But life is different for everyone and everyone has different fears. You can't. Yeah, you know, I bet, you know, parents have different fears about, what their biggest fears are. This is just my path in life and that's the way it's, you know, ended up for me.
Yeah. No, that's great, mate. Thank you. Where are you at now? Are you, like, happiness is a strange thing to talk about, but I usually think happiness is like this fleeting feeling, right? But it's the content feeling. It's that peaceful feeling that can be prolonged.
Mm-hmm.
Are you content with where you're at and what you're doing with bravery and how your life is now?
No, not content. Content, again, gives that impression of you're happy with where you are. And I don't think I ever like to feel as though, this is enough for me. You know, I always want to try and take things to the next phase or what's next. But certainly, you know, I've come a long way since my injury and I've had to re-piece my life back together piece by piece, literally from scratch. Literally from scratch. And I have reached a point now where I'm pretty, I guess, okay with where I am. And I'm, I could say I'm fairly happy with where I am in life. Like you say, happiness is fleeting. It comes and goes, but overall I'm okay. I'm okay. But I still want to achieve more. I still want to do more. I still feel like I've got a lot to give. I guess I'm at a transition period.
Amazing, man.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, it's great to hear.
Put me on the spot. I don't really know.
So what is that future then? I know you've got so many exciting things you want to do.
I mean, the future for me at the moment is I really want to focus on my company, Bravery. At the moment, it's gotten to that point where I need a bit of help and investment to try and, you know, there's only so much one man can do by himself. And, you know, you build it up to a point by yourself. And now it needs that expertise and external bolted on other bits to make it grow.
More support,
I suppose, but expertise and things like that is what it needs.
Specialism and all that.
Specializations in their field to try and, you know, get it really out there, and that's hard because that takes financial investment. That's really where I'm at, is now growing it to that next level, which I don't really know what I'm doing, if I'm honest.
No one does.
But yeah, I'm just going to keep trying. And I don't know. I don't know. That's the beauty of it, you know. And hopefully it'll work out. But that's what my future is at the moment. And then hopefully it'll build on to, bigger and bigger and better stuff.
Yeah. What are the services, Toby? If people are listening who might be interested in working with you or understanding more about what you're doing, what are the services you offer?
Well, I mean, at the moment it's predominantly our sources of revenue are product based, you know, extreme sports product based stuff. So we're looking at, you know, getting into the hardware of the extreme sports world and a bit of the clothing and producing a clothing line. But it's a clothing line, you know, it's Braveries, like I said, it's a brand with a bit more than just a brand. It's almost like cap badge, if you like. It's one of those brands that you can say, yeah, I've really I've pushed myself to the limit. I've got, you know, I've taken myself to further than I thought, and I'm proud of that, and I've been brave. And then, you know, like I said, we're involved in extreme sports because I believe, you know, doing those sports you can learn a lot. And yeah, there's transferable skills there that, you know, will be valuable in your life to come. But at the moment, yeah, we're quite product-based. And then we want to start moving into sort of like a media powerhouse, which takes it on to like doing events and things and people getting involved and then telling their Bravery stories and coming down to the events and having talks and then taking those stories and then putting them out there for other people. And then other people get involved in building this, like a Bravery community, which becomes like, yeah, just like a fantastic audience. And then people want to be involved in that. You know, they want to collab and they want to, you know, partnership up with Bravery. Because you got this fantastic audience and this fantastic backstory and a brand that actually means something. And it just becomes more. Yeah. And it becomes, you know, some sort of something like that, you know. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Oh, completely.
As a kind of a rough business strategy. Mm. Yeah.
Well, look, I'm here for it. Anything. Honestly, anything I can do to support and
help. Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, that's really cool. Well, you know, by inviting me onto your podcast, you've helped me reach an audience and get out there and be able to, yeah, just spread the word. So I appreciate it as well. You know, yeah, you're already helping.
Good. Thanks, man.
I appreciate it.
Well, Toby, thanks so much. I really appreciate it, mate. You're an inspiration, so authentic. I can feel that as well when you're telling your story. And it's been amazing speaking with you this afternoon. So thanks, mate.
Cool.
Thank you.
Awesome.
You have reached your destination.
Hey, it's Mark Whittle. Thanks so much for watching or listening. It's so great to have you a part of the Take Flight movement. Subscribe to the podcast on all platforms, video and audio, to be the first to see new episodes and new conversations with the greatest minds in the world. Follow me at MarkWhittle_TF on all social platforms and visit takeflightworld.com to join our growing community of hustlers, performers and go-getters. I can't wait to see you next time. Until then, stay positive, stay motivated, and of course, take flight.